recap what we discussed last week. Last week, the Kuzari asked the sage, he said, why is it that we see other nations who seem to be practicing piety in a much more intense way than you folks? Now you folks can have very great sages who, believe it or not, are married. Right? And very great sages who, we've seen them eating meat. Right? And some of them were woodchoppers. Others were businessmen. You look at the great people of the other nations, you see people who wear skins, and they're up there in the mountains, they have nothing to do with society, they spend their lives fasting. There seems to be a lot more dedication out there than by you folks. And you're saying that you're actually the seed of the divine presence in this world. How does that add up? So the sage, as we saw last week, almost basically lost his patience. He said, it's annoying. He said, it's cumbersome how much you keep forgetting what we keep discussing. And that is, he said, that service of Hashem has to be dictated by Him, not by our conception of how it ought to look. And therefore, no, we're not up there in the caves and wearing skins because it's not what He told us to do. He told us to do other things. And here we got to a very fundamental point, because then the Kuzari king came and said, not exactly. You're coming and saying, no, service of Hashem is only about doing what He says, and therefore, it's not about the deep prayers and the ascetics, etc. It's just about, do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. The Kuzari king is taking it as two extremes. Either you're involved in intuitive service of Hashem, or you're involved in, He gave you a list of instructions and you do them and that's it. So he said, but I see that that first of all makes no sense. That service of Hashem shouldn't include expressions of subduing yourself before Hashem, etc. And second of all, I see that your Torah itself contradicts what you're saying. Your Torah says, what is Hashem asking of you other than to fear Him? Right? And other expressions, Hashem says, what do I need all your sacrifices for? I just want you to hearken to me. Right? So here's where the sage came and said, you're right. He made a bit of a step back from the extreme way he was presenting it. And he said, certainly, there's the whole intuitive level of service of Hashem. Certainly you have to relate to Hashem in the way that we understand is appropriate. You have to relate to Him with fear, you have to relate to Him with love, with passion, with dedication, etc., etc., etc. And you have to be a good person, you have to perfect your character, and you have to be good to the people around you. He said, but, the next level is, that based on that intuitive service of Hashem, it has to be expressed through the mediums that Hashem gave us, and those are the 613 mitzvahs. So therefore, he says, and here's where we came to the salient point of last week's discussion, that if a person is only involved, the point is that all of those intuitive feelings should be expressed through the mitzvahs we do. Tefillin is not just an issue of mechanically putting on tefillin. Tefillin is an issue of, you feel that deep appreciation to Hashem, you feel the gratitude, you feel that you should subdue yourself towards Hashem. How should you do that? Don't do that by lying on the floor with a sheepskin, do it by putting tefillin on. Express, channel all those feelings into that tefillin. That's it, of course. So just like the other nations understand, you have to serve Hashem, you have to serve the Almighty through passionate prayer and dedication, etc. Yes, that's all true, but we do that through our mitzvahs. So Meili says there are two sides to the coin. When it reaches a situation where we're only performing the external mitzvahs, but there are no inner feelings involved, we've basically emptied all of its value. That's worthless. The whole concept of the mitzvahs is the next layer. Hashem says, every human being should be serving the intuitive. For my chosen people, I'm giving more specific ways of doing them. But at the end of the day, these are ways of expressing all those dynamics that you're supposed to have in your relationship with Hashem. Dynamics of trust, of faith, of fear, of awe, of love, of humility, etc. That certainly, that's the battery of it all, just like they believe. Just that by us, it channels into the 613 mitzvahs. One without the other is completely inadequate. If you tell Hashem, look Hashem, I love you, and therefore, I'm going to give up clothing and wear sheepskins for you. But, Kriya Shema before 8:15 in the morning, that's not my strong point. That I'm not going to do. I like to wake up at 10. So I'm not going to do what you say, but I have other ways of making you happy, Hashem. That's when we get back to the whole Kuzari state. That's a sacrilege. You want a relationship with Hashem, serve Him on His terms, not on your terms. But on the other hand, there's no question that all the things He instructed us to do, but on tefillin, say Kriya Shema, etc., are all meant to be means of that intuitive service, of expressing our appreciation for Hashem, our love for Hashem, our dedication for Hashem, etc. You have to bring this point home a little bit more, because this is really a very, very fundamental point in Yiddishkeit, that Yiddishkeit is not about doing actions. Yiddishkeit is all about the relationship with Hashem. Just that relationship with Hashem has to be expressed in the right way. But if those right ways are not expressing a relationship, what's the point? It's the way the Chovetz Chabad put it. We'll give the following mashal. What's a family? You say, well, a family, I'll tell you what a family is. In a family, there's the female member. The female member cooks, does laundry. I don't think that's politically correct. I would agree with that today either. The man does the cooking and the laundry, and the woman is out there contracting, right? So, but let's describe a family in the natural state. So, here's the definition of a family. There's the female component. She cooks, does laundry, and shops. There's the male component. He does the work. The consequence of marriage is a bunch of little components. Fine. Okay. There, we've defined a family, right? No, you might have described what a family looks like on a day-to-day basis, but you haven't just defined a family. The essential definition of a family, the battery behind the cooking and the shopping and the working, etc., is the relationship. The love between the man and the wife. At least the love that should be there, right? Now, in order to keep that together, she cooks, and she cleans, and she does laundry, and he works, and he brings in money, and he does homework with the kids, etc. But those are not that's not the essential definition of what a family is. On the contrary, the main quality of the family is that inner level, the love, right? That's what the family is. The technicalities of the family are the externals, right? Taking the car to the mechanic. Okay, so now we'll ask qualitatively. It's a funny question to ask. But qualitatively, what percent of the family's activities are on the inner level, and what percent are external activities? So if you're talking about a family, a close family, right, with a good, solid relationship, the inner dynamics of the family, they'll say, well, 95% of the quality of the family is beneath the surface. It's the love. And the external level is like 5%, right? If you have a family who says, well, 99% is the externals and 1% is the love, it's not necessarily because they're doing a lot more externals than the other family. It's that they have a much more shallow relationship, right? And they're missing out on what a family is really meant to be. So it's the same thing when we're talking about our relationship with Hashem. Two people are shaking a lulav, right? For one person, it begins and ends with his hands. It's an external activity. The other person says, no, 5% of this external activity is external. 95% is internal. What's internal about it? What's internal about it is all the love and appreciation that's going into the shaking of that loop. That's what's internal about it. And this is our real service of Hashem. The real service of Hashem is the service on the internal level. Because the greatness of man is not his limbs. The greatness of man is his inside, his intellect, his emotions. Right? What holds the family together? The emotional level. What makes man the most powerful creature on earth? If he were to try to have a fist fight with a gorilla, the gorilla would cream him. Forget about an elephant. So how is it that man has gorillas and elephants in cages, and not vice versa? Not because of man's physicality. Not because he has good arms and legs. Because of his intellect. So man's quality is his intellect. Man's greatness is his intellect. And therefore, when we're talking about service of Hashem, that should be where our main service of Hashem is. So if a person thinks service of Hashem is about doing this and doing that, you're missing the point. You're missing the point. Okay. So now, the Khuzari says, alright, so now I get it. This is the difference between you and the other nations. The king says, alright, like Kefi Asher Ikdamta, I agree with you that yes, once a person is told by Hashem what to do, if he comes and says, well, Hashem, I love you, but I'm going to express it other ways, his love is worthless. His love is not for real. Right? That will be the same as the other way around. But a person comes and tells his wife, look, I love you. So Victor Miller said, before you marry a man, she can tell women, ask him what he does. I make sure that he has a clear agenda for life, you know, he's a productive person. You know, a girl once came to him, she said she's dating somebody. And Rabbi Miller knew that this person was basically a loafer. He didn't want to just come out and say it that way, so he asked him, he was talking to her about the shidduch, and he said, well, what does he do? Innocent question, right? What does he do? He knew what the man did. He didn't do anything. He's a loafer. So she said he's an author. That's what he told her on the dates. He's an author. So Rabbi Miller said, how many books has he written? Well, he hasn't actually published anything yet. He's still working on his magnum opus. He's still working on his first creation. So he's still working on his first creation. He's an author, don't marry him. If the author already, you know, he's got books on the shelves and there's an income and the author is a beautiful job. That's what we say here also. The person's got all the inner feelings, but it can't get him off the couch. Or the person says, yes, but I'm going to channel those inner feelings into other things. Right? Knows that his wife loves flowers, but he much prefers a good beer over a football game, so he buys her tickets to a football game. Expression of love, that's what he would like. It's also worthless. Khuzari says, alright, I get it. Avodasa philosoph, according to the philosophers, Ya'adam Chosid, a person can be pious, as you learned earlier at the beginning of the Sefer. They believed in connecting to the divine, even though they believed that the divine was not really a conscious being. They believed that it was something kind of automatic that you could connect your soul to, and that came through a perfection of character. They also believed in perfection of character and perfection of intellect and meditation. Now, the main thing is for a person to be able to become pious, become perfect, and bring that out through whatever means you can. It makes no difference what religion you choose, because religion is not really the point. Religion is just the medium through giving physical expression to the piety you're trying to develop. What is the piety? The piety is detaching from physical involvement, right? And perfecting your character, etc. You can do it through the Jewish way. You can do it through the Muslim mediums. You can do it through the Christian mediums. It makes no difference. As long as you're giving expression in order to really bolster the piety you're trying to reach. So, it doesn't make a difference which religion you choose. In Yahed, whether you decide to become Jewish, or Behit Natser, you decide to become Christian, or other such things. Or there's another option. The Davar Sheyivda Milibay. You choose your own religion. According to what some of the modern Buddhists claim, I don't know if this is so or not, but I know that this is a claim that they make in order to try to make Buddhism a bit more attractive to the Western mind. They say that Buddhism is also really the same thing. Buddhism, they don't really believe in any God per se. To the best of my knowledge, it's not exactly accurate. I think that in the Far East they do have all kinds of dolls and stuff. But whatever it is, let's say. They say that no, the point is really just to be able to anchor your own personal perfection of what they call just getting rid of your own ego and merging with that joint common human sense of self together with everybody else. And you do that by subduing your ego before some statue, but not because you really believe the statue has divinity. It doesn't have divinity, but it's good exercise for helping you overcome your ego by offering, making offerings and bowing, etc. This is mamish what he's saying. The point really is that you can't just work with thought alone. Human beings have to work with physical actions too. So find the right physical actions. Even if you don't really believe in that deity per se. And he says, and therefore, once again, it boils down to that the means of achieving piety and the means of getting close to a deity are through you figuring out the means for yourself. What are good ways for me to express my feelings of piety and to develop it further? And therefore, this developed into the sheepskins, right? Living out in the caves. That way you are rising above all the physical, the coarse physical elements, etc. And you're making yourself a great person. You're refining and perfecting your character. But what's it all? It's all human beings figuring out what the way to go about it is. The Yukob Ne'adam Ishtadim Nikvayak Tayyobim Hashem Nibiyo Eilav HaKashosam Vizem Bata. And he says, and therefore, religions would be based on each person figuring out what he thinks is the means, the medium of getting close to a deity. And you set up rules according to that. And then each person can have his own religion, theoretically speaking. He says, that's good as far as the philosophers goes. But if you really believe that there is a live deity, a live God, who has his own ideas, this obviously is not the way to go about it. So therefore, we come back to the Jewish perspective, and that is that we take our instructions from him. Now we come back to the question, or we come back to analyze the point. We already took the edge off the question, but that at the end of the day, it seems that they're a lot more intensely involved in these pious activities than we are. Right? Look, they detach themselves completely. They don't marry. At least they say they don't. Right? What do they say? Near every monastery and nunnery, there's always an orphanage in the area too. But whatever it is, they don't marry, and they this and they that. Why is the Jewish concept of piety seem to be a lot more still entrenched in the physical realm? Omar HaChavet. So the Jewish sage answers, you're right. Teiras Moshe lo he'evido isonu b'prishus. The Torah of Moshe does not demand asceticism. Am I pronouncing it right? Asceticism of us. Ach b'derech HaShavet. It demands leading a balanced life. Each of your different natures, each of the natural elements of a person's physical and emotional constitution are meant to be satisfied in the right way. See, here also we're coming onto a fundamental question of faith. Man has sexual needs. Right? What's the approach? Is the approach that that's just evil? It's just about rising above it, which almost is unrealistic. Or do you say, one minute, Hashem created man, which means that every urge that man has inherently is good. It's just a question of lining it up with Hashem's will. So therefore, all of man's natural instincts and all of man's all the koiches hanefesh v'aguf, all physical and emotional functions have their place. Because on the contrary, the beauty of Yiddishkeit is that Hashem created you. Yes, He created you as raw material. But you're meant to develop all of your natural feelings and harness them all into one big beautiful picture of service of Hashem. If you're going to go the other route, let's say the route of, you believe in not marrying. So you're not going to get rid of the sexual urge. You're going to always have some nudnik appendage to your personality that can never be given expression, and it's just a reminder of how bad you really are. Right? You're never going to get rid of it. Look at food. Food is a coarse physical activity. As holy as you become, you're going to have to still keep eating. So there's a ceiling to how great you can become. Because again, the urge to eat is something that conflicts with any spiritual progress. And you have to satisfy that urge. So, on the contrary, what we believe is that all of man's natural elements have to be satisfied, but in the right way. And that's where the mitzvahs of the Torah come in. Without being overdone. Because he says, man is full of conflicting natures, conflicting tendencies. And the idea here is to get the right balance. That's why we call midas, midas. What is a mida? Right? You know, we call it good midas and bad midas, but the truth is that that's a misnomer. There aren't really good midas and bad midas. It's about getting each mida exactly right. Every mida has its place. And that's why, what does the word mida literally mean? The word mida translates as a measure. Measure. Mida is a measure. Right? So you talk in terms of business as midas. Are measures, right? So the point is to get the measure right. The way the Rambam puts that in a broad way is the middle path. By the way, this Rambam is one of the most popularly misconstrued Rambams around. People take that to mean that Yiddishkeit should be approached in the middle path. That's ridiculous. Yiddishkeit has to be approached all the way. No such thing as a saying. You tell your wife, look honey, I believe in doing things in a balanced way, so I love you halfway. Right? So I'll find a different husband. If you love your wife, you love her all the way. In fact, half love is not love. It means kind of liking. Love, by definition, is something extreme. There's no such thing as a middle, halfway approach to Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit is all the way. What's that?
How can you have two wives?
Today you can't, because it can't divide your love. In earlier times, they had much, much bigger even emotional capacity. And put it this way. Today we can still connect with the idea that having two children is not necessarily a conflict. I can love each one fully. With wives, the dynamics are more complicated, and therefore today, it doesn't work. But the point is that there's a level of emotional need that you have to be providing to your wife. Today, as hard as we try, maybe we're getting to 65-70%. Okay? Now, that's debatable, we can argue about that, we can discuss it another time, but whatever it is, to take on two wives is murder. You're murdering both of them emotionally, because you're never going to be able to provide anywhere even half of what they need emotionally. In earlier times, people were much bigger in the sense of emotional capacity. There was also intellectual capacity, spiritual capacity. The sensitivities were much better developed. And yes, they had the capacity to be able to provide, as much as today it seems inconceivable, they would be able to provide for two, or maybe three wives, or maybe four wives, if we're talking about Yaakov Avinu. Each wife was able to come out with her emotional needs completely satisfied. And that's why it was acceptable in earlier times. By the way, while it was acceptable, almost from time beginning it was discouraged. It was never encouraged. And when it was done for a reason. Okay, that's in parentheses. But where does middle path come in? On the contrary, in order to live the Rambam's middle path, you have to have an extreme approach. Because the middle path is a lot of work. It means with all of the midas, all of your character traits, to get them in the middle path. For example, stinginess and generosity. Have a person who's tight-fisted, he can't let go of a buck. Then you have the guy who can't say no. Which is better? The Rambam says both are wrong. You have to be in the middle. I can give, and I can say no. I have the right measure. You have a person who loses his top over everything. Then you have a person who's emotionless. Nothing moves him. Doesn't get upset at anything. He's cool. Neither one is correct. You have to be able to feel things and react, while at the same time, it has to be controlled. Middle path. You start thinking about it in these terms. You have to have a very, very extreme approach if you want to be successful in reaching that middle path. Because it's a lot of dedication and a lot of work. Whatever it is, that's the idea of the middle path. Getting all the midas, the right measure. The right measure. No mida controls you. Not the mida of stinginess, in which case you can't give anything away, and not the mida of not being able to say no. My intellect decides in each case according to what's appropriate. That's the idea of the middle path. The right measure means you bring every mida into your control. Now, some midas are meant to be exercised more than others. For example, let's take mercy and cruelty. Jewish trait is the trait of mercy. Does that mean that cruelty should be out of the picture? Certainly not. You have to be able to be cruel too when it's warranted. There's no mida that's always out of the picture. Just that here we'll say that your spiritual constitution should be 97% mercy, compassion, and 3% cruelty. That's why, that's where the mitzvah, for example, of Mechias Amalek comes in. Besides the idea of getting rid of Amalek because of who Amalek is, there's a very, very fundamental point being brought across there. And that is that don't let your natural emotion of compassion take you over. You have to be ready to rein that in and say no when Hashem says otherwise. That's why Avraham Avinu was tested with the Akedah. He was the epitome of compassion. Hashem said, can you do an about face on your nature for me? So
how is that the middle path come?
Seriously, a good question. Oh, very good. The truth is, here we're coming to a more refined understanding of what the middle path really means. Middle path does not mean 50-50. It doesn't mean someone provokes me, one time I react, one time I don't. One time I react, one time I don't. Also doesn't mean giving away half of your money. How much of your money are you supposed to give away to tzedakah? Because I'll send no more than a fifth. You're supposed to give a tenth, no more than a fifth. Middle path should mean 50%, right? $1 I keep, $1 I give. Middle path means something else. This is how I've heard it explained by my Rebbe, and the truth is when you think about it, there's an awful lot of profundity here.
What's the golden path? Am I confusing something?
I think that that's just the Christian way of saying the middle path. But I'm not sure.
Not a Rambam thing also? Shpil Zahav?
Could be it is. I take back what I said about Christian. Could be it is. I don't remember the Lashonis now. Maybe he refers to the middle path as this. Perhaps. I don't remember. But whatever it is, the point of middle path really means as follows. It means that you as a person are always in the middle. It doesn't mean that you use each meter halfway. It means that you are the person always in the middle. You are never pulled to one more than the other, because you reach a situation where you are in absolute control. And therefore, in every situation, I'm in the middle. I'm not pulled towards one more than the other, and therefore I decide. Based on what? Based on intellectual discretion. Not by being pulled in one direction more than the other. Therefore, you always walk in the middle path. It could be that 95% of the time, you'll choose the right rather than the left. But you, the point is, get yourself on the middle path. Break out of any situation where any particular meter controls you. You have to be in control of your meters. Be in control of your generosity and be in control of your stinginess. Be in control of your achmanis and be in control of your achzarius, your cruelty. Right? Be in control of your anger, etc. It's always a decision. What ought to be done right now? I'm in the middle. I'm not pulled naturally. And I decide. That's the middle path. So now,
what you're saying is that we have to strive with the Buddha not to have control over us. If you get to that point, that's the middle.
Right. Right. And why is that called the middle? Because the point is that you as a person are in the middle. You are not naturally sucked in either direction. Right. Now, from that middle vantage point, you may choose 95% of the time to go in one direction because that's what's more called. Which will be the case, for example, with the Midah of Rachmanis. Right? So there. So now he says, the Torah, in a big way, many of the mitzvahs of the Torah are coming to do that. Are coming to temper our natural inclinations and tendencies and bring them under control. Often, if you're going to just put too much of a focus or let one midah take over too much, it's going to come at the expense of something else. Meaning, for example, if a person is going to go too much after indulging himself physically, that will inevitably come at the extent of your intellectuality. It's going to turn you into a coarser person. You're not going to be as intellectual a person. You're not going to be as thinking a person. And also the other way around. The more you restrain yourself in the physical level, the more you'll refine your personality, you'll become a deeper person. You'll develop the intellect more. That's a big discussion. We're not going to get into that now too much. But really the point is as follows. when you're controlled by your lust, that's automatically going to shade your vision. You're going to see things in the way you want to see them. Whenever you have decisions to make in life, there are going to be all kinds of lusts and desires that are going to help you make the decision in one direction or the other. The more you bring your desires under control, the more of a clear head you'll have, and the more pure discretion you'll have. The more you'll be able to rely on your discretion. Not that there are deeper feelings or desires that are helping get you in the direction that you really want to go. Okay? So therefore, yes, bringing the taivas under control helps clear the mind. Here's another very interesting example. As people who are assertive, is it good to be assertive? Is that a good mead or a bad mead? As we just said now, there is no good mead and there is no bad mead. Assertive is essential, and assertive is very problematic. Right? So it depends. A person sometimes has the mead of being assertive, which means that it controls him. He's always got to get the last word in, and he has to push his opinion, etc. Right? And he's always out there to get his point across, and everything turns into a power struggle because he said it, and that's how it's got to be. So on the one hand, you have to be assertive because you have to be able to stand up for the good thing, for the right thing. If you're a pushover, you'll be getting into trouble all the time also. But on the other hand, if you'll develop your assertiveness too much, it'll come at the expense of your relationship with other people. That's why, also, my Rebbe used to say that you've never really engaged in chesed if you can't say no. Because if you can't say no, you are being controlled. It's automatic reactions. It's instinctive reactions. It's not real virtue. It's certainly better than a person who automatically says no. Better to automatically say yes than automatically says no. There's less damage and more profit on that side than on this side. But it's also not good. Because you're not achieving chesed as a virtue. You can't say no. And on the contrary, you'll often resent it. And you're developing an aversion towards the chesed that you're doing. And you're walking around clenching your teeth and doing it because you can't say no. That's not the chesed that we're talking about. The chesed that we're talking about is loving to do the chesed. You can only love to do the chesed if it was completely your choice because you appreciate what it is and you want to do it. And therefore, any chesed that you're pressured into doing is compromised chesed. And therefore, when a person is the type of person who can never say no, a person is the type of person who always feels pressured and feels like he has to, etc., you have to be able to turn that around in order to start really engaging in chesed. And therefore, my Rebbe said that this person has to exercise saying no. Overcome your nature. Tell people no when you feel funny. Feel like you're letting them down. Exactly. The opposite extreme. Also, in the context of this middle path, if you're all the way over there, you got to get all the way to the other side in order to... Exactly. So therefore, yes, tell people no. Tell people no for the purpose of improving your personality. Okay? He said, what happens when you reach a level where, you become a natural, and now you're starting to enjoy it? It's good to tell people no. But then you know you got there, and now you can stop. The first time you enjoyed telling somebody to no, you got there, now you can go back, now you can start saying yes again. Because now you've developed the capability of saying no. So assertiveness. You can't speak up against people doing the wrong thing. Also, you're going to lead a compromised life. So therefore, he says, now let's get into some more examples of what the Kuzari was getting at. He said, you know, what's with asceticism? And what's with rising above physical desires? So he says, if you turn spirituality into fasting, sleeping on the ground, and wearing sheepskins, and not being married... So he says, you have a person, for example, who doesn't have a taste for food. Food is not his thing. And different people have their areas. This guy is a lazy guy. He'd rather stay in bed than eat breakfast. So you know what? Now he has it. A silver platter. He's holy. because he skips breakfast every day. Right? He's not interested in breakfast. He's holy because he skips breakfast every day. Or the guy who can't act like a mensch towards his wife, and he feels self-righteous, that he's on a higher spiritual level because he's not busy with his wife all the time. Right? So, a person who doesn't have strong desire for food, and he's a weak guy, for him, fasting is not service and it's not piety. No, he should eat good things. In fact, the Rashba says, the famous classic tshuva of the Rashba, that there was a man who vowed not to eat meat. Pious man. He vowed not to eat meat. Okay? And he ran into complications and things. And the Rashba asked him, what do you do? He's a teacher. Teacher, he teaches children. The Rashba said, the vow never took hold in the first place. Why? He said, because if a person vows to do an Avera, it's nothing. It doesn't count. For a teacher to vow not to eat meat, for a teacher to vow not to eat hearty foods that are going to keep him robust, is an Avera. For some people, indulging in meat is an Avera. For other people, abstaining from meat is an Avera. And therefore, he said, the Neder never took place. Never took effect. So he says, he can't come and say, piety is about working to balance yourself. And therefore, what might be one person's piety will be a different person's indulgence. But by that, what might be that person's indulgence is your piety. Okay? So now, for such a person, he should eat well. Eat well, l'shem shamayim. Dig in. Realize, I'm a weak guy. I don't have the koiches to live my life well and to serve Hashem right, and therefore, I have to get onto a very healthy and hearty diet. Right? For Hashem's service. The point is always to bring you to that position of the perfectly balanced and controlled personality. But certainly, for the guy, for the glutton, right, who just can't help himself, whenever he smells something, he goes in and orders, and afterwards checks what the heksher is. Right? For that person, we say, cut out also permitted meat for a while. Get yourself used to being able not to eat everything that you see. For that guy, we say, when you go to the chasana, abstain from the main course. It's a mitzvah for you. For the other guy would say, order roast beef for lunch and supper every day. Similarly, is being poor an ideal? Not having money. Not having material possessions. There. Also, a spiritual ideal. Why be involved in materialism? So he says, no. Having no money is not an ideal. Having no money is an ideal in the sense that don't be preoccupied with running after money. Don't let it distract you from the main things in life. Keep your involvement in the main things in life, in your service, in your Torah, in your Avodah, the main thing, even if it means having less money. What happens if a person is trying as best as he can, but what can he do? $1 million deal fell at his doorstep. Nebuch. Right? He says, there is no piety whatsoever in turning that away. Having no money, or having less money, it's not a form of piety. If it falls at your doorstep without you putting too much effort into it. And if having that money is not going to distract you from your spiritual progress, from your tefillah, from your learning. And certainly, if a person has children, it's a mitzvah to have money. Making money to support your children, support your wife is a mitzvah. Making money to buy a wife that extra piece of jewelry is a mitzvah. Making money to take your children out on an outing that's going to strengthen the family ties is a mitzvah. Right? Make that money. Where is money a problem? So he alludes to that in this little sentence. If you're putting too much koiches into money, and you have no koyach for anything else, and you have no mind for anything else, and you have no time for yourself, money is a problem. And then we say, you have to focus, you have to start diminishing your interest in money. You have to start cutting hours out of your work. But don't take that to mean that money and spirituality are mutually exclusive. No. The average person trying to support a family, money is a sublime function. You have to realize that. It's like the Kabbalah Sofer said. Who set things up? It's unfortunate that we have to go and work in order to support our family. Wouldn't it be better if we wouldn't have to do that? The question is, well, is that circumstantial, or did someone set it up that way? Who set it up that way? Is it Ribbono Shel Olam? Hashem set it up that way. So what are you saying, unfortunate? Hashem set the world up perfectly. Perfectly. You just have to hit the right balance. So therefore, the Chiddush HaVavah says, when you're working, okay, you're a plumber, when you're busy switching the pipes, you have to intend that I'm doing this for the sake of the mitzvah. What mitzvah are you doing? Well, first and foremost, he says, you're cooperating with Hashem's plan. This is the way Hashem wanted the world to run, and I am willingly cooperating with His plan. I'm not doing it with the krechts. If this is what He wants, I want to do it too. There, your work is a mitzvah. Your work is a mitzvah. You and the guy next door are both working, but you're involved in a mitzvah all day long. He's not. Because for him, the work is a distraction, it's a headache, and it's a preoccupation. It distracts him from his ruchnius, distracts him from Hashem. He doesn't have the head for anything else. For him, it's a spiritual impediment. For you, it's a mitzvah.
So why are we encouraged past the melech so far? Seems to be
ideal. Seems to be an ideal.
Right, but this is saying that would not be an ideal.
Oh. So here, if we'll give the Maharal's take on this, and this is basically the classic way of understanding it. This means mamish what we're discussing. Paspa melech teichal means make yourself capable of eating bread and salt. Don't need more than that. Don't depend on more materialism than that. That's the idea. Yes, if you can have more, but don't reach a situation where you become dependent on it, because then, if things get rough, you have to be in a situation where you can manage with less, because your spirituality might demand it. What happens if a person, let me give you a simple example. You pass by Malach Toichal for a person who's very well to do. Okay? Here's an example of Paspa Melach Toichal. Person is well to do, he's used to, every day he comes home, breakfast is fresh roll, an omelette with mushrooms and onions, okay, and a freshly ground coffee. He doesn't not want to take coffee from a jar. Freshly ground coffee has a coffee machine. Okay? After he's okay with such a breakfast, he goes out to a shir. Okay? He comes home one day. A, the coffee machine is broken. And B, all there is now in the house is bread from yesterday from the freezer. His wife is out with the car. He can't go to the bakery now. Can't start his day without his breakfast. Or can he have pas b'melach? He's going to take bread from the freezer. Again, his wife isn't back from shopping yet. There are no eggs in the house. So he said, I can't start the day this way. I have to sit home for 45 minutes. If I miss my share, I miss my share. But I can't start the day without my proper breakfast. Or can he live past b'melach teicha? He's going to take two slices of bread out of the freezer. He's not going to have his coffee. He's not going to have his egg. He's going to eat, and he's going to be gone well before his wife comes home. Here it's going to depend on how much you need that gashmius. So therefore we say, it's a good idea to exercise paspa melach teicha. Every so often, deny yourself the omelette. Why? Not because the omelette is bad, and enjoy it when you have it, but in order to train yourself not to need it. That's why it's a very good thing to practice abstinence. That's basically the way the Maharal puts the paspa melach teicha. He says, you should always make sure that you're in a state that you could live with paspa melach. Now this will demand exercise. It's good to exercise telling yourself no every so often. There are people who respond to food. I'm using food because that's the most classic example of physical indulgence. But there are people who respond to food. Chocolate cake gets them moving. If there's cake, they respond. They eat. Right? And people aren't in control. Food controls them. They don't control their eating. Food controls them. You should be in control of when you eat, what you eat, how much you eat at any given time. And therefore, every so often tell yourself no. Do you have to tell yourself no to the chocolate cake on the table? No. But it's good to every so often. Often enough that you retain the capability of telling yourself no. Because, A, there's the example that we gave. There are other examples also. If you instinctively, whatever this cake on the table, you eat, right? And then one time you're going to be somewhere where the heksher is questionable. But you are completely not accustomed to not eating when there's cake on the table. Again, if you know it's not kosher, we're all strong enough. But here, it's something you wouldn't normally eat, but it's here on the table. And you even smell it. There, it's going to depend. Do you have the exercise on that? All of a sudden, tell yourself, no, now it's not going to be so easy. Pas b'melach teicha means maintain that capability. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's how you have to live your life. When you do eat that egg, because now you decide you're going to have the egg, but not because you have to. That's the idea of the pas b'melach. But it's all coming back to the same point. You control your life. And that's what so many of the mitzvahs of the Torah are aimed at doing. Okay, that'll be that for this.